This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And joining us is Jim Moore. And Jim, you got to be excited because your Cleveland Browns get to play today on television.
Professor, I am excited about that, and thanks for having me this morning. I appreciate it. I haven't really seen the Browns much this year, and I guess I just pull for them because I like underdogs, and I just think it's a good story, and I know that you downplayed the chance that they still have to make the playoffs, but I haven't given up yet. They're getting three at Denver today, I think, and if they happen to win today, they'd be 6-7-1, and we'll see how it shakes out, but they've still got a chance, John.
Not much, no. I mean, I can't. John, I don't see it.
John, it's a chance, though. You'll acknowledge it's a chance, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's a chance that you can win the lottery too.
I know.
There's always that chance.
Well, you have to buy a ticket. You have to buy a ticket to win the lottery, though.
Good point. But yeah, it's. Yeah. I don't know. But I don't know. I do
well,
like
do
Baker Mayfield.
Do you think they'll win today?
What's that? I don't think
they'll win. Cleveland will win today?
Yeah, I think Cleveland. I think Denver will win.
You think Denver will win today?
I do, yeah.
Okay. All right. But you'll be watching.
No, I'll be on an airplane. Unless the airplane, I mean, I'll watch a little bit of it. Flight.
Okay, you're heading to San Francisco then.
Yeah, so hopefully I'll be able to, get a good glimpse at it and see some of the stuff.
Okay. Well, and Denver still has a little bit of a chance still. They're 6-7, so
right.
So we'll see. It should be an interesting game anyway.
Yeah.
I love
interesting
this time
part
of year,
about...
though, when there's Saturday NFL.
Yeah, isn't that good?
Yeah, it's great. Because the bowl games haven't really kicked in. I know ASU and Fresno State are playing today in the Las Vegas Bowl, but it's another week until we start getting into the thick of that. So
right.
it's fun to have the NFL toward the end of the season on Saturdays.
No, I like that. That is going to be kind of the fun part because we only get it for two Saturdays, though. That's the only sad part. So next week we'll get it, and then, of course, everything's going to be on Sunday all jumbled up, but not a lot of mystery. I mean, there's not going to be a lot of mystery when we start to look at the landscape because, again, I mean, pretty much you know who the top – well, 10 of the top teams in the playoffs are. It's just a matter of who's going to get that sixth seed and then where the seeds are going to end up.
Well, yeah, but still, it's going to be fun, especially with the Seahawks. And I don't think many of us thought that they'd even be in a position to get the wild card. And here they are with a 99% chance of making it. It seems like they could even make it if they don't win another game. But with San Francisco and Arizona still on the schedule, you like their chances to win two of the next three. And we'll see how it shakes out. I'm just trying to figure out whether you want to play at Chicago or at Dallas. And I guess, John, would it be better to go to Dallas than Chicago at this point, given how the Bears looked against the Rams, that defense?
Yeah, I don't know. I still like the idea of going against a young quarterback that's not playing too well right now. That, to me, seems to be appealing. Going against, because, right now we don't know how good Mitchell Trubisky is.
Better than Trubisky, though?
What's that? Dak's a good quarterback.
How do you measure Prescott versus Trubisky?
Prescott's better. And he's got Amari Cooper.
Not doing that much, I wouldn't think.
No, I think significantly.
Really?
Mitch is still young.
Okay, and he's got that shoulder injury.
Right.
So you're dealing with that. And, John, I'm gonna set one up for you here, and I think you're going to give me a hard time about it. I'm taking Green Bay as a smoking lock this week, +5 at Chicago.
Wow.
And it was after, I already made the pick, and then we talked to you yesterday, and you mentioned that Brian Bulaga was out.
Right.
So that can't be good, John.
That's not going to be good, no, because who's going to be blocking Khalil Mack?
I know. I was thinking about it. And then after I did all my research, too, I heard some guy on the radio go, and Green Bay is winless on the road this year, and I'm taking Green Bay +5. What in the world? Well, it's the Aaron Rodgers factor.
Right.
If you have Aaron Rodgers, you have a chance in every game.
I agree. Because he is that good.
Okay.
He is such a great quarterback. I wouldn't rule him out. I mean, but in fact, this will be a good test because let's say that Green Bay does win, right? That shows you one of the reasons it's going to be bad play by Mitchell Trubisky. That's why I'm still wondering, even though it's cold, even though they have a better defense, that it still might be better to play in the cold against Mitchell Trubisky than it would be in a dome against Dak Prescott.
Yeah, it's a tough one, though, because you look back on it, and Seattle's played both Chicago and Dallas this year. We know it, when they lost to Chicago, they hadn't quite figured out that they wanted to go predominantly with the run, and it sounded like Schottenheimer really was enamored with Russell Wilson and everything that he could do. And then you face Dallas the next week, and you beat them, mm-hmm. and yet you're facing a different Dallas team this time around.
Right, agreed. But again, I think both teams, you know, I mean, Seattle can win against both teams, I think.
Well, don't you think they could beat just about anybody in the playoffs the way they're going right now? They've won four in a row, and we've talked about it with their
I don't think they can win. I don't think they can win in if they. I don't think they can win in New Orleans. I still think they have a tough time with the Rams, but of course they do match up against them because it's a division rivalry. So, I still think there's a decent chance that they can get into the second round. I just don't think they're a Super Bowl team.
Well, I don't either, but at the same time, I don't look at the rest of the NFC teams and think that anybody's a prohibitive favorite. And you're saying the same thing, and I've heard that, and I kind of feel the same way, that the Seahawks would have a chance going down to L.A. and playing against the Rams, because we saw how they played against them in two games, only losing by 5 points in one and two in the other. But why is it that everybody thinks that Saints are going to be able to that Seattle would have no chance against the Saints? Because I'm not hearing good things about New Orleans' secondary.
It's just because, you know, you got Drew Brees at home, and he's so potent with that offense. That's the key for them.
But haven't they shown that, what, against last week against Tampa Bay, they had a rough first half, lost at Dallas.
But then remember that game was on the road.
Yeah.
New Orleans at home is they're tough. That's the thing that would concern me.
Still, if the Seahawks could make it to the NFC Championship game, what a season that would be.
Oh,
and even if they lose in the first round, this season has exceeded expectations.
Agreed. No, they've had a remarkable season. But again, it's funny because that's one that at least I hit on, because I said I never varied. I said they'll win 9 games, be a wild card, or have a good chance of being a wild card, and if get a break, which of course I consider the Carolina game, they win 10. And I've had that all the way through.
I thought they'd go 8-8. I didn't think they'd make the playoffs. I thought there were too many young players that they were going to rely on in starting roles this year, mm-hmm. and the transition with the coaching staff. I just figured that it would be a year where they were shifting and getting things in order for 2019. And boy, here they are. It's really been interesting, John. Do you think ultimately that when they do lose in the playoffs, it's going to be because of that secondary?
It'll be because of the secondary, but also because probably the lack of pass rush and the fact that they're taking on some great offenses. That, I think, is going to be the main reason.
Well, they certainly have been great, you know, and the injuries, it's even when they get the injuries like they have this week without Penny and without Fluker, you look at what they still have behind those guys,
right.
the running back depth that they have. I don't, as much as Rashad Penny, he's flashed lately, and he looks like you can see why they picked him with the first-round pick. But you're not really going to miss him with Mike Davis, and you got J.D. McKissick coming in there. And then with Fluker, Jordan Simmons has been fantastic. So
he has. Agreed.
They're going to have a decision to make in the offseason with whether they want to keep Fluker if Simmons keeps playing the way that he has.
No, I mean, they do have options. That's the one thing I think they have a good advantage on right now, is that, they've got flexibility. The thing is, I think what you're seeing is they've got depth, and that's something you didn't expect with all the players that they lost. And where I say depth, okay, they're 4 deep at running back. Okay, so you take Penny out, but you're right. Mike Davis is there, and you got speed coming off the bench in J.D. McKissick. You look at the offensive line, I mean, they can't even get Ethan Posick on the field because Simmons is the big body. You've got Fluker and you've got Sweezy. And, you know, Fant is looking like he can still be a pretty good tackle. But then, all of a sudden, Jermaine Ifedi's come on.
No, the offensive line has turned into a strength. That's the most remarkable thing that's happened this year, is that everybody who's watched that line the last couple of years, it was one of the definite weaknesses on the team. And you just chalk it up to Mike Solari coming in here, mm-hmm. and Sweezy. I thought Sweezy would be a decent player. I didn't know if he was going to be a starter. I thought he'd be more of a depth type guy than coming in. And then the way, John, that he went from right guard to left guard like it was nothing. And you talk to some guys, and it's not really nothing. It's a transition that guys have to make. It's a big deal. But Sweezy, who'd never started at left guard before, just stepped in like he'd been playing it his whole life. So it's been fun to watch. And Effetti, I'm happy for him too, because it seemed like every time his name came up, it was in a negative light. And now he's getting some positive reviews. And so the whole thing has come together with the running game and the pass protection, and then having a franchise quarterback like Russell Wilson. And all things are possible heading into the final weeks of the season.
Oh, yeah. And I think and that's the thing. I mean, because you can not only see it's been fun for this year, but I think you can also see it's going to be fun for the future.
Well, yeah, with Russell just turning 30 years old and
right.
The way he takes care of himself, if he could play until 41 or 42 like Tom Brady, and and the numbers that he's putting up, I always get a kick out of it when people are critical of Russell for this or that or some little quibbles that you have about, well, GM, what is it now? I heard the other day that he doesn't look as fast as he used
to
be on
that
40-yard run. And I'm just going, well, okay, whatever. And I overlook that. That was one of my things, too, with thinking they were going to go 8-8. Whenever you have a franchise quarterback like Russell Wilson, whoever the other 21 guys are, you still have that franchise quarterback, and he's going to give you a chance to win every single game.
I mean, that there's only six incidents, and it's now going to be seven, I guess, if you want to include Atlanta, that a top seven quarterback doesn't have an 8-8 record or better. And what happens is that as long as you give up less than 23 points a game, as long as you have a running game, and as long as you have that quarterback, I mean, you're going to win at least eight. That was the logic that I used, and so far it's worked.
Well, and then if you ever doubted Russell Wilson, it really wasn't this year, and he's going to set his own personal record probably for touchdown passes in a season. If he has a good game against San Francisco and then Kansas City and Arizona, we'll see how that plays out. But last year was the year that told you everything you needed to know about Russell Wilson, because he had to do it all.
Right.
Because he didn't have a running game. And then this year, John, you can also, if you want to be critical of him, he's done a lot of what he's done without Doug Baldwin. Now, you have the good news where Baldwin, it sounds like he's going to be able to play tomorrow.
Right.
But he won't be 100%. But without your number one receiver, and Wilson has still been effective. Okay, he wasn't great in the last game, but still, he had the 40-yard scramble that got you into position there to close out that game, and he's just been fantastic overall.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's been, I think, the fun part about this whole season is that they play to a high level, and they're a fun team. I mean, that's the one thing that's kind of interesting about them. They're fun in the locker room. I mean, they're good quotes. I mean, they have kind of a fun team to be around, and that I think has been good.
No, it has been, and we interview on our show a Seahawks player almost every day. And yesterday we talked to Emmanuel Ellerby out of Rice, a backup linebacker. And when you talk about good quotes, John, it was so funny because I went to the interview thinking, oh man, what are we going to talk to this kid about? And yet we got in there, and he was just so fun telling us his story about how he was undrafted and went to Atlanta and then ended up with the Chargers and how he got to Seattle and all the details. He went on and on and on, but it was just, it was so cool how excited he was, and just to see kind of the innocence and the fun that he's having playing in the NFL. And you get caught up in the business side of it, and the cold reality of day-to-day NFL football. And yet here's this kid that's having the time of his life and thinking he's going to be a Hall of Famer someday. And it was just, I think, and you see these guys and how they believe in each other and how together they are and how much fun they're having. You see the videos in the locker room and you've been in there, John.
Oh, yeah.
You've probably seen all the dancing too. So the celebrations after the touchdowns and it's been fun to watch.
But of course you don't like the celebrations after the touchdowns.
No, I'm kind of getting to a point where they're going a little too far out of their way to come up with those different things. And yeah, I'm the get off my lawn guy. I get it. I'm 61 years old. I still like it when a player scores a touchdown and hands the ball to the official. And so, you know, fuddy duddy, you know, that, I guess that's who I am. What I really want to see now, John, because they've taken it too far, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I think DeMarcus Lawrence did this in a game a week or so ago. I want to see an opposing player come in there and blow up the celebrations. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, we just kind of
yellow flags involved with the celebrations, John.
Okay.
What do you think?
Okay. Well, I mean, that would be a celebration, but how do you mean by blow it up?
Well, whenever they're celebrating, doing the Macarena or whatever they're doing, you know, an opposing player comes in there and just, you know, delivers a forearm shiver to somebody.
That would be bad.
Because that happened, John, it'd be fun.
But then the guy gets suspended. Then you lose your player. I don't think that's a good idea.
Well, okay. Well, collateral damage, John.
Yeah, that's true. All right.
Well, I'm in the minority on that.
Yeah.
I like celebrations. I like people having fun, but the choreographed stuff, I think, has gone a little too far.
Yeah. Well, I like it. I think it's a fun thing. But again, hey, enjoy the Browns game today. At least you get a chance to see Cleveland football.
Okay, John. If they're 6-7-1 on Monday, I'm going to be asking you about the Browns playoff chances again.
Okay. I'll be giving you a negative answer. So just be asking. I'll give it.
Okay. Thanks for having me, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rob in Burlington. Hey, Rob.
Hi, John. A couple of comments. My first one has to do with the three-headed monster that we have at running back.
Right.
I absolutely love it. And Mike Davis, you know, if you compare Mike Davis to Chris Carson, Chris Carson probably has more flat-out breakaway speed.
Mm-hmm.
And they have different styles, and yet there's something very similar about them, too, in that they both look for contact. They both, you know, I remember when Mike Davis did his ride with G, and he talked, he said, "I got cut. I got cut." I mean, he kept repeating this.
Right.
I mean, he's never forgotten that. That humbled him, and that really dedicated him to show that gave him the drive to be what he is. And when he comes in the game, lots of us are just pulling for him all the time, because he's so exciting. And when you go from Chris Carson to Mike Davis, you're getting very much kind of the same thing, not quite, but right in there. And the contribution is invaluable. And then with Penny, we've got a three-headed monster, and I hope to goodness that we don't let that get away from us.
No, I don't think you have to worry about that, because I think that again, they might lose Mike Davis, but I think they want to try to keep this.
John, why would we lose Mike Davis? Why?
Because he'll be a free agent, so they're going to have to pay him.
Well, then let's fix it.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, let's fix it. We got it going on, and the comment about, keeping Simmons and letting Fluker go. You know, I want depth as much as you can do it. I mean, the way this team is structured right now, we are not going to have a repeat of what happened last year with Jacksonville or with the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to get embarrassed like that, even though we've got lots of injuries. We're playing those guys when we're really down. This team has cycled back to what the coach has always envisioned for it. And it seems to me that the way this team is constituted, of course, and also with Russell, we're never going to have that happen again.
No.
We're not going to have to watch the Rams walk all over us again. Not as long as we have an offensive line that is making Aaron Donald and Dominick Sue defend every bit of their grass and put them on their backsides, which is where they belong.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about was the role of Cam Chancellor on the team. I've got his jersey now, and he's not playing, and he was always one of my very, very favorite Seahawks, because I felt like he gave so much of his body to the team.
Right.
He gave so much of his health to us. Those hits took a lot out of him, too. It wasn't just him delivering a blow. He also paid a price, and we know. But I see him on the sideline, so I assume he still has a role with the team because I think his contract for this season was guaranteed.
And next year's contract's guaranteed.
He's earned every single penny that the Seahawks pay him, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what is his role right now with the team?
Injured player getting a chance to just try to see if he could ever get healthy again, which he probably won't. I would not be surprised because, again, I think, you know, at some point if he gets into coaching, because I think he'd be very, very good at coaching. And I think it'd be very great to have him around. I mean, look at what he's done in teaching Bradley McDougal what to do and try to do it. And I think that, I mean, he could be very good at that. So I hope that's something that he would consider.
Well, that's great because, you know, with Cam to McDougal, the torch is passed. I mean, they're not the same players. Of course, McDougal was himself,
mm-hmm.
and that's exactly what Cam would want him to be. But I hope he continues to have some role with the team. I love to see him on the sidelines. It's a good voice to have around.
Right.
You can never have too many good voices around the team, I think.
No, I agree. Hey, thank you for the phone call, John. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call here as we head over to talk to Robert in Tacoma. Hey, Robert.
Hello, how you doing, John?
Good, how are you?
Good, first-time caller, actually. I'm pretty excited to get to talk to you.
I appreciate that.
So I had only two things, but now I have a third because the last caller gave me another idea. So I'm going to start with a quick one. Do you think Cam Chancellor would be a good secondary coach for the future?
Yes, I do. I think he'd be excellent. I mean, you know, whether it's breaking it off, just teaching safeties. But, I mean, he's so well – because he's so well-respected. He knows the game so well. I think he'd be an excellent defensive back coach.
I was thinking that, too. The second thing, do you think that we will have one 1,000-yard rusher and the other two can both break 500 in these last three games?
I don't know if Chris is going to make 1,000. I mean, I think he's clearly going to get 900. It'd be nice. I still wonder if he's going to get a little bit short of that. I know the effort's going to be there, but I think the one number that's going to be interesting to see if they get 500 carries. Because if they can get 500 carries, you know, they did that a couple times with Marshawn Lynch. You know, right now, they're sitting with 422. But, yeah, I guess maybe I think Chris might be able to do it because he's got 794 right now. So if he just averages like, 60-some yards, I mean, well, he needs 206. So it's within reason. If he has a 100-yard game like on Sunday, then I think there's a great chance he's going to be able to make it.
Definitely. And now I have a hot take for you. I think the Seahawks are out here playing revenge football for this playoff season. I think if we can take everyone – except for the Saints. The Saints is the only team that worries me. I keep hearing everyone saying we're not a Super Bowl team, but I think we might play spoiler this year.
Well, we'll see. I mean, again, just enjoy it. Let's not put too much on it. I mean, again, most people didn't think they were going to make the playoffs. They made the playoffs, and they look very good in doing it. And, again, I still have to clinch it tomorrow, but, take one step at a time. Just make the playoffs and see if they can win a playoff game.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Hey, Robert, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to John in Rochester, New York. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Good, how are you?
Good. Just a couple of things. One, on the Pro Bowl voting,
mm-hmm.
I think I'm the opposite of other fans. I never vote for my Seahawks players to get in the Pro Bowl because I don't want them playing in that meaningless game and getting hurt like Tyler Eifert. And number two, it just drives up the price for them in the free agent market once they start making Pro Bowls.
Yeah, well, that is true. But I think that, the players like it because, you know, they can get a little bit extra money. There's incentives in their contracts, and there's a recognition that the team's pretty good.
Yeah. Second thing, have you heard anything on how Will Dissly is coming along with his rehab?
I mean, I saw him the other day. I mean, you know, it's still a long process. I mean, he's still kind of limping around, but again, he is making progress, but way too early to make any kind of determination. Way too early.
And just one quick question for you too is why you may have covered this before. I was just curious as to why when you go to games, do you always go on the opposing team sideline?
Stay neutral. That's why I prefer being on the opposing team sidelines because, you know, number one, I get to learn so much about the team, which is good for my national coverage. I get to, you're not, you know, looking like you're on the side of one team. I mean, you're on the broadcast team. But again, I like being on the opposing team sidelines because I really get to learn a lot and it helps me out because now I'm starting to do some network games and it helps me just, you know, having a better feel. I mean, like, you know, I can come out after the game and talk about some of the dysfunction that the coaching staff had at Minnesota last week. I wouldn't be able to do that if I was on the Seahawks sideline.
Oh, cool. Oh, and one more question. Oh, actually, an observation, John.
Yeah.
For the Cincinnati Bengals, I believe that if they go ahead and if they end up getting rid of Marvin Lewis and they end up giving the job to Hugh Jackson,
mm-hmm.
I think that they're going to really lose a lot of fans. I don't know how if you've noticed how empty their stadium has been.
It will be a tough sell. I would agree.
What's that?
I would agree. That would be a very tough sell.
Yeah.
It's hard to sell three wins in 3 years. Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Will. Hey, Will, how are you?
I'm good, John. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a first-time caller.
Well, appreciate that.
Yeah. I just wanted to try to generate some positive support for our 2019 Seattle Mariners. It just seems like all the sports radio talks I've listened to and this and that, they're already admitting defeat. And I think that's kind of demoralizing to the new players coming in and the rookies and this and that. I mean, they bring in a whole new excitement and enthusiasm and that. And they listen to these comments that people call in and even the sportscasters.
Mm-hmm.
It's all negative.
Yeah.
So, My comment is, let's win. Let's go out and support them. That's a win in itself. They make exciting
Well, they need that. There's no
they
question. They need
win,
that.
But, you know, let's welcome them.
Mm-hmm. That's the problem is when you do a redo like that is that you know you're going to lose. I mean, simple as that. I mean, you're taking talent away. I mean, it's probably going to be a 70-win season. Are you okay with 70 wins?
No, I'm never okay with it.
But that's a reality because it's still the talent.
Since the Seattle Pilots, I go out and even on a losing case, I enjoy the excitement of it, the plays that get made. You know, not always, but you know, it's still let's support them rather than have a dark cloud over their head before they even play the first game.
Yeah, I can't argue about that. I mean, they do need the support. There's no question about it. And that would be great if everybody would support them. So, good luck on that. Because, again, they need as much support as they possibly can.
Absolutely. And if I could afford it, I'd be there as their number one rooter.
There you go. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Anyway, thanks for taking my call and have a great day. I appreciate the comments.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rick in Twin Lakes. Hey, Rick.
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning.
I called you a few weeks ago, and it was after the Panther game.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling you about the Seahawks and the problems they were having on defense. They weren't setting the edge. They weren't sticking with their run gaps. And, of course, when they were playing the receivers, they'd be in a zone, and they were just covering the area and not following the guy who happened to be in the zone or
right.
passing them off. And the next week, the following week, against the 49ers, they did set the edge. They did stay in their run gaps, but however, the passing they were still leaking on pass defense. Then against the Vikings, they seemed to solve their pass defense.
Mm-hmm.
They actually did rather well. It seems like the defense is slowly coming together, and they're looking good. And that's all you can ask for all these young guys. They,
right.
they seem to get good pressure on the quarterback against the Vikings, and they did rather well. But one thing that I noticed on offense that they were not doing, they ran the ball extremely well, as you know the numbers prove out. But however, in the passing game, they struggled. And there was one phase of the game they did not exploit, and that was the pass to the running back. I would love to see Russell Wilson hitting Penny and Mr. Carson both of those guys go, what, 235, 240?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And have those running backs, I mean the defensive backs, try to tackle those guys after they got ahead of steam. That would soften them up a little bit, and that's one thing that they didn't pick up on. You know, what do you think about that? Did you happen to notice that?
It's not
that?
A bad idea. I mean, I don't see any problem with trying to get some screen passes out there, and I think now that J.D. McKissic is going to be getting a little bit more playing time, I think that would be something to do. I mean, I think that what they're concentrating on is just running, and I think that they like the way that Chris Carson pounds the ball, and they certainly like all those different things. But, I think that
But what I'm saying is that say when they fake the ball to the running back and they go to pass, just hit the check down. They only had one pass to a running back last game, mm-hmm. and that was open. I could see
but
it.
Remember,
was
it's
wide
like
open. They kept trying to go downfield.
Yeah, well,
but
it works.
The thing they do when they what do they call it when you fake the pass to the running back and then you throw it? But anyway,
RPOs or run pass options.
Run pass option. Yeah, I mean, and it's wide open, man. I mean, they left a lot of first downs on the field.
Mm-hmm.
It's all I was saying. That's one phase that I'm looking forward. Now, a lot of people are talking Super Bowl. Man, that would be fantastic, but just to make the playoff and give these young guys some experience.
Right.
Let them know what playoff is. It's a total different speed.
Mm-hmm.
Like preseason is a different speed than the regular season, and the playoffs is a different speed than the regular season. And just to get these guys experience, like we did that first year against Atlanta, and when we felt like we should have won the game, and the next year, we figured out, hey, the water really ain't that deep. We can swim across.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a fair position to be, and I think that that obviously is going to be their plan. I think that that's hey, you take them one step at a time. I mean, this is a turnaround, and again, this is the team I thought it was going to be. We'll see if it get advanced past that. I still think that they'll still struggle on the road against the high-powered offenses, but I do think whether it's Dallas or Chicago, they can win a game like that.
Exactly. So let's not be worried too much about Super Bowl. Let's make the playoffs. First, and then hopefully gain some experience in the playoffs. Hey, John, if I don't talk to you before Christmas or New Year's, happy holiday to you and yours.
Hey, well, thank you so much.
Thank you
for the phone call, and have a happy holiday yourself. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call here. Let's take a break and come back. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave. David, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, John Clayton. And right off the bat, let me give a shout-out to the memory and legacy of Doug Blakeslee. When we were kids, we played a lot of street football with the Del Monte crew, and sadly, last week he was laid to rest. So before I started talking football, I had to say rest in peace to my childhood friend.
Appreciate it.
Now, let me say, John Clayton, it's always good to be on the John Clayton Show with the professor during football season, especially a Week 15 Jokers or Wild game against the 49ers. But I got to tell you, John Clayton, I'm still seeing red, despite a big Monday night victory, because the Seahawks were suited up like a gang of giant L's. John Clayton, I was at the game in Seahawks Stadium with my nephew, Theodore, when the Hawks got their tails handed to them by the Chicago Bears while wearing lime green jerseys for the first, last, and only time during the one and only year of Jim Mora. Shout out to the memory of the dearly departed Seahawks owner for firing that guy after one season. And John Clayton, I thought the lesson was learned. Never wear those lime green jerseys again, not to mention matching pants and looking like 11 green goblins on the field. And that's no disrespect to the Green Goblin,
right,
who's a bad mofo in his own right. But mm-hmm. The Green Goblin is comic book. This is the National Football League. And I'm sure I'll get no argument from Seahawks Al when I say the Hawks shouldn't come running out of the tunnel of Seahawks Stadium, the most daunting stadium in the NFL, looking like a team of Riddlers. Now, if all you're going to do for four quarters is giggle and say, riddle me this, that's one thing, John Clayton. But when you're in the hunt for a wild card and trying to prove that the 2018 Seahawks are no jokers, you can't be dressed in head to toe in green like you're waiting for Batman to swoop into your secret lair. And yes, the Seahawks won another wild Monday night game at Seahawks Stadium. But John Clayton, if I wanted to watch How the Grinch Stole Christmas with 10 other Grinches, I would just watch How the Grinch Stole Christmas with 10 other Grinches and not Monday Night Football. But to paraphrase Bill Belichick, we're on to San Francisco. And John Clayton, you asked me during the summer where I thought the Hawks would finish this season. And I said I believe they were a playoff team because they, based on what we have seen Pete Carroll do with this team, it was the proof in the pudding season that they would be way better than a lot of people were expecting. And now tomorrow, the Seahawks get a chance to lock up a wild card spot that the go-to guys, Cleveland Browns, probably not going to get to. But I will agree with him that the choreographed touchdown celebrations do need to be broken up with a four-arm shiver. Now, John Clayton, I've been hearing a lot of talk about the Seahawks, their slot in that wild card, drawing the game against the Cowboys. But looking at that NFC East with three games to go, that division is still up in the air, isn't it?
Not really. I mean, Washington's in disarray because they've lost so many players, and they're down to their fourth-string quarterback. And here's Carson Wentz now out, and they're 6-7. So it looks all set for the Cowboys.
Well, all right. Well, you know, this the last games we've always seen in that division in years past, anything could happen. I was thinking that maybe that was a kind of a situation again this year. And lastly, John Clayton, since I feel Victor breathing down my neck here, let me give a shout out to the builders of the Seattle Coliseum and their families. And I say families in the memory and legacy of the builders no longer with us. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. The shovels are in the ground. The Coliseum is going to be taken down to the ground, but it wouldn't be if not for all of you. Go Seattle Hockey. Go Seahawks. Hawk and roll. Safe travels, John Clayton.
Hey, thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Colin in Bothell. Hey, Colin.
Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Hey, you know, after watching Russell have extended success and seeing how long Drew Brees has been doing it, mm-hmm. and a lot of the critiques that those guys got on their height, and now you see Kyler Murray, who's, you know, sub 6 feet, winning the Heisman, and he may go play baseball or whatever.
Right.
What do you see, what do you hear from scouts, analysts, in draft rooms about franchises who just cannot find a franchise quarterback, and they're looking at, you know, assessing guys who have the intangibles, they're proven winners, versus guys who just have the physical tools? I mean, I would take the risk and say I'd go for a guy who's sub 6 feet instead of ending up with a potential Blake Bortles.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, that's the one thing. They have to be special if they're going to be shorter than 6 feet, mainly because, I mean, they can't see as well downfield, and they either have to have the brains or the speed or a combination of whatever to make it all work. That's where the challenge is, because it's just simply not easy to be able to do it when you're not, you know, when you have to sacrifice a little bit. But, hey, Russell is proving, and I think has opened the door now for a lot more players to be able to have that opportunity.
And those conversations are happening during drafts.
Yes.
I mean, there's obviously not a lot of, you know, super home run hits like Russell or like Drew Brees coming up as potentials in the draft. But, I mean, Russell even fell in the draft. But did you see that the Seahawks were building their offensive line at a smaller size to try to compensate for that?
No, they wanted big. No, this year they want big, because the idea is to overpower.
This year, but I'm saying like previously under Cable, because it seems like they never had a huge offensive line.
No,
do you think
he wanted, you know, Tom Cable wanted more of the athleticism than the speed. I mean, you know, the athleticism and speed as opposed to the size. Mike Solari's come in here. I think you can see Mike Solari's system work. Hey, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
John, another great show.
Well, thank you.
Hey, a quick analogy real quick, and then I'll get to a question. John, say you have been writing articles all day long, and you always turn them in at 12. And then say it was one game you write an article on. Now, let's say you have 15 games to write an article on. You're not going to be able to make that 12 o'clock deadline anymore. That's kind of what's happening with the mail. So it should get back to normal in January and in February with all the parcels.
Let's hope,
but
because it's been tough.
A quick one with today's game. John, do you see Denver be able to create enough pressure on Mayfield so there'd be some turnovers?
I could see that, sure. I mean, they got the two best edge rushers in football, the best combination of that, Von Miller and Bradley Chubb. I mean, I can't see why they couldn't.
And that would be the key to the game, is keeping him running and not comfortable in the pocket.
Right.
Okay, and then how is Cleveland's run defense? Are they good?
They're not bad. I mean, they're talented. And, that's the one thing I think you can see that's been building pretty well is their defense. Their defense is not bad.
Okay, so if Denver was to attack the defense, if they're able to attack anything passing-wise, which way would you go?
I'd go over top, try to get because I think, we're taking, Denzel Ward's going to miss the game, so he's – they're going to be a little bit weaker at that cornerback position. And then, safety-wise, I still don't know how good their safeties are. So I would try to go right in the middle of the field. The one thing I wouldn't do if you're Case Keenum, because he's had three straight games of under 200 yards, is do what he did early in the season and try to think he's a big-time thrower throwing it downfield, because that's just not his game.
Yeah. He's done good at not creating turnovers, but he's not taking any chances either. So it's kind of a double-edged sword there. Then I got a question. I noticed Sutton's a very large, powerful wide receiver, and he has speed.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't seem to be creating too much separation to where Keenum would want him throwing the ball. What does he need to work on? Would it be his quick twitch type thing?
Yeah, or quick twitch and double moves and things like that. But again, he's a talented rookie, and he doesn't have great speed, but he's got good size and good hands. And I think he's going to be a good one.
Okay, and then same with that Patrick kid. He seems like he has a lot of ability and size to make plays on the wide receiver end.
That I agree, yeah. No, I think that they've got a good combination. I mean, that's why I say it was a great draft, but now they've got to see if they can finish it and see if there's a chance they can make the playoffs.
Do you think that I know Keenum's improved over the last three or four quarterbacks Denver had the last couple of years. Do you see that he's hit his wall and this is basically what he is, or do you think he's able to take another step forward with learning being more involved in the offense maybe later on this year, next year?
Yeah, I think he's hit that wall. I don't know if it can get much better. I think that's got to be a big concern. Hey, got to run.
Take care, John.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody. We'll be back on Monday at 10. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.